Welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast, where we address the issues facing Georgia's political landscape and the solutions driving us closer to a cleaner and more sustainable future. My name is Christian, and today I'm joined with the person that is leading us in this work, GCV Executive Director Briante McCorkle. Welcome.
Hello, hello. Good to see you.
Listen, we've done so much this year. Can you talk a little bit about just some of the programs, maybe some of your favorite programs that GCV and GCV Education Fund has done?
The most fun that I've had all year is dragging the Public Service Commission. But in all seriousness, we have been doing everything we can to raise awareness about this race. It is incredibly important, so much more so, I think, than some of the big national races that usually capture our attention. So I've appreciated that, you know, despite everything going on in D.C., the most important thing happening in Georgia is this Public Service Commission race. And so earlier this year, we started with trying to hold the Public Service Commission accountable through the Integrated Resource Plan process, which is just a fancy way of saying long-range energy planning. In this process, the power company basically forecasts how much energy they're going to need to meet demand, and they put it forward a proposal on how they're going to meet that energy, what types of energy sources they're going to use. Is it gas? Is it coal? Is it nuclear? What's that mix look like? So in any of these long-range energy plans, what we're looking for from the power company is more expansion of renewable energy. So things like solar, wind, battery storage, energy efficiency. So we intervened this year, and what that means is we got a bunch of technical experts to go in and examine the power company's energy model and to make a case that they can meet their energy demand needs with renewable energy. We also got to get in the weeds of what's going on with data centers and the skyrocketing projections on electricity usage because of those data centers, because you can't Google anything anymore or do anything really without AI being involved. How much of that, those data centers are really going to come to our state? How much electricity do we really need to meet that demand? And again, can we do it with clean energy? And we found that we really can. I think that the demand projections are a little outrageous right now, and they need to be right-sized. And we also need to be careful about building out a whole bunch of gas and coal for demand that never actually manifests. And we've been getting people involved in that, getting them to come out, make public comment. One of the funnest things we did was just call people and say, hey, you know, the Public Service Commission is hard at work right now, raising your power bills. Do you want to talk to them? And people were like, absolutely. And so they were calling the commissioners over and over again, letting them know that they did not want to see their bills go up, especially not to pay for data centers, you know, which is basically like giving a handout to big mega corporations like Meta and Google that can afford to pay their fair share. But yeah, we also want to make sure that we're seeing more clean energy as well. And so we were having a lot of fun with that earlier this year. I'm over here talking about data centers and like energy demand projections, and I'm like, fun. But what's been interesting is people are seeing these data centers pop up all across the state of Georgia in their communities, and they're curious, they're asking questions, and they mostly want to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of to build out all of this stuff. And so people are paying attention, they want to know what's going on, and they want to be involved in shaping what the future of not only their communities looks like, but also what energy looks like.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's amazing. And I feel like that's just such a, even just a small portion of how we're reaching people, right? How, with the work we've been doing. It feels like this has been a long year and it's not over yet. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a quick little question before we dive into the hard stuff.
Okay.
In a perfect world, in an alternate timeline, if we didn't have to fight for environmental justice, what would you be doing?
Oh, that's such a big question. I wasn't even expecting that. You know, I don't know, laying somewhere in the grass, watching the sky. I think that, you know, if climate and environmental justice were not issues, right, because everybody had food, housing, water, you know, shelter, all the things, and they were healthy, right? Those things didn't result in them getting sick because the air is polluted or their homes, you know, aren't environmentally safe to live in. That would have to be the baseline. People would need to be secured, taken care of, have the basics. There would probably be some other form of injustice that would capture my attention. I mean, you know, I'm a fighter for the people. That's what I do. I can't look at injustice and not, you know, name it for what it is and feel like something needs to be done about it. I can't accept things the way that they are if they're harming people. Yeah. So I probably would find something else to fight for. But even, you know, let's say that there was nothing at all to fight for, right? Nothing at all. Yeah, I'd probably just be laying in the grass somewhere looking at the sky, enjoying the way the sun feels on my skin, hanging out with my kid. You know, because that's really the future that I'm pushing for, right? Is that people do not have to grind so hard to live. They can just enjoy being alive, which means enjoying the planet and enjoying the people that we share it with.
Yeah, I love that. I was doing a seminar about communications, and I was giving a scenario of storytelling, and I was talking about how, you know, what's your motivation for waking up? That's your story, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Why did you get out of bed? And I said, for most of us, that story might look something like, you know, I got mouths to feed and food doesn't grow on trees. Mm-hmm. And I just kept talking and somebody said, excuse me, food does grow on trees.
Yes.
And they're absolutely right. But the mm-hmm. fact that we think like that it does, and yet we have to pay for food, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think about things like that. I'm like, I just feel like food should be free, right?
100%. Like, you know, a lot of what I want to see is people take back the means of living, right? We can just grow food, but people don't know how to do it anymore, right? We could have really just a small operation. You don't need a lot of space. It could feed a lot of people, you know? I have 2 chickens in my backyard, and people are always like, you have chickens? Yes, we can have chickens in our backyard. They produce a lot of eggs. Listen, if you want some eggs, let me know.
Call
me. I am the plug. So, yeah, you know, just 2 chickens are producing more than enough eggs to sustain me and my family. You know, our big mission in the next year is to really build our garden, our vegetable garden. And we have fruit trees already that produce fruit, figs, peaches. You know, this type of stuff is, again, and I recognize I'm a homeowner and I have the land, but even in apartments, you can have really, you know, tight operations in a corner of your apartment, get you some grow lights, mm-hmm. right? And I think we've just lost the knowledge. We've gotten used to living life a certain way because that's the reality that has been presented to us. You go to the store, you buy food, right? It takes just somebody challenging that and say, well, why can't you just grow some of this on your own? And also, this is how you do it. It's really easy to do it. And just giving people the knowledge, the resources, the tools to do it and making it as easy as possible. Because, yeah, what the future that we're headed too, if things don't change, is you will own nothing.
Yeah.
You will own nothing. You will go to a corporation to get the basics, mm-hmm. Everything, food, water, shelter.
Yeah.
They want you to buy it. They want to create a system that allows them to extract wealth from you, right? You pay them for it and they profit. You labor and they profit. And I want to make sure that we know we have a choice. We don't have to go in that direction. And sometimes it means doing things in a way that we feel is a little old school, like growing our own food. But that's actually going to be really good for us taking back our power and protecting the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's real. Okay, so I want to get into some of the hard stuff now. This is why we're here. Elections. They're coming up literally next week. Let's talk about some of the municipal elections happening here in Georgia and kind of why they're important. I know there are a lot of city council elections. Can you just talk to us a little bit for the people who are listening and watching? What is the importance of a city council representative or a city council member?
Yeah, you know, we think often when we think about elections, we think about those big top ticket races, the president, the senator, and then we forget about all the things that are happening in the state. And all the things that are happening locally in the city, in the county. and how transformative the decisions that are made at the local level are on our lives. So I said earlier that I own chickens, right? Why am I allowed to have chickens? Well, the city has an ordinance that says that I can own chickens, right? Some cities have ordinances that say that you can't own chickens, right? You know, if you want to own the means of production, you've got to like change those local laws that say that what you can and cannot do in your own backyard. That's not something that, you know, Trump is making a decision about. That's something that City Councilman A has a decision power over. So we have to really understand how much power is given to cities and counties and local and state governments to you know, shape our lives. So ordinances like what you can and cannot do with your property. I mean, even gardening, right? Some places don't want you to garden, right? They don't want you to have a garden because it's an eyesore and they've got all these regulations about how tall your grass can be. And, you know, that kind of thing is a local level discussion and a local level decision. Zoning, you know, most of the time when people reach out to us about something happening locally, it is a zoning issue. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm upset about this thing getting built in my community. This plant is opening up and it's going to pollute our air. What can we do? And typically it's a land use zoning problem, right? Your city decides, okay, here's all the land within our, you know, our jurisdiction, within our boundaries. And based on, they put a map and they say, this can happen here, this can happen here, right? So this can be residential, this can be industrial, this can be mixed use. And so a lot of the decisions about what gets built in our community are predetermined by zoning laws, you know? And so, yeah, if you don't want to live next to a giant warehouse, you need to check to make sure that the zoning of that land is an industrial. If it's zoned industrial and then a company buys that land and decides to build a giant warehouse on top of it, you really don't have a whole lot of power to change that because the zoning said that that was an acceptable use. So, you know, it's tough because people are busy. They've got lives, you know, they've got bills to pay. And, you know, knowing where to go to even talk about zoning in your city is not something that you're taught. It's not something that's readily available. We've all gone to school. We all took the, like, civics American right? history civics classes, and it's like three branches of government. But nobody really tells you, like, how to go to City Hall or how to go to your county commission and what they do and how to get involved. But that's, again, that's where those big transformative opportunities are. And then you turn on the news, and everybody's talking about what's happening in D.C., right. And, you know, what's happening in some other part of the world. And nobody's really talking about what's happening down the street from you. And so, you know, I really hope that if we do nothing else over the next several decades is that we reactivate the desire and the energy around local organizing in our country, because that's how democracy is going to get saved, is people coming together locally to fight and on for things that they want to see for their communities locally. School systems, right? Those are local school board elections, right? What your kids are and are not learning, the type of environment they're learning in, what types of programming they have access to, that is all hyper-local decision-making. So yeah, we use tools like Branch to make sure that people can read about all of these different races and what they actually do and who the people are that are running for it. Because, yeah, the worst thing as a voter is showing up in the polls and being like, who's this? What is this person? What does this race do? Why is it important? So we want to make sure that people are informed. And it takes groups like us and also people like you all who are watching the podcast and learning to share and spread the word with people you care about so that this becomes general knowledge and not specialized knowledge.
Yeah. And I love the way you frame that because, like, the communities that we live in and the things, we live in Atlanta, and we always hear about the potholes.
The right? Potholes.
People talk goodness. About Atlanta potholes like they are a staple to Atlanta. It's like the lemon pepper wings.
I just had to get my car fixed, okay? They were like, rough driving, rough terrain, and I'm just driving around the city.
Well, this is one of the things that I love about what we do here at GCV is that mm-hmm. I think we do a good job of making things applicable to people in their everyday lives, right? We know that like, oh, you should get out and vote, but rarely do we say like, and this is why, like from a realistic standpoint. And so one of the things this year that has been huge and people have really been showing interest in is their power bills. And people have made it clear that they are upset about the cost of their energy. Who knew that that was a voting issue?
Right, right. Well, we all know now, hopefully. Okay.
Hopefully. Let's talk about why. Why? So give us the breakdown. I'm in fifth grade. I've never heard about the Public Service Commission, and I don't pay energy bills. Explain to me.
Well, if you don't pay energy bills, you're going to be like, what is the fifth grade? No, but seriously, it's such a long story, but you know, we've been producing electricity for over 100 years now. You know, back in the day, you would just light up a little candle. Everything was manual. You know, over time, we've built a society that really thrives on the usage of electricity. Well, where does that electricity come from, right? It's just energy, right? That's converted into electrons that, you know, we use to power our homes, our businesses, and our lives. So where is that energy coming from? You know, the first major power plant was a coal-fired power plant, you know, steam, coal. And we continue to largely still use coal to produce energy. So you burn coal and that gets converted again into electrons, right? Over time, what we've seen is utilities move away from using coal because of groups like ours and many others who have seen the devastating health impacts of burning coal for energy, because there's that air pollution that comes out. You have the waste left over from coal, which is coal ash, which what do you do with a bunch of toxic waste? Well, right now they're just leaving it in the ground and in landfills or in ponds that leak into the groundwater. And so, you know, at least the utilities are seeing, okay, that's not the best way. And so what we're seeing them do is move to gas as a source of energy. The issue with gas is that, you know, while it's a little bit less polluting than coal, you're still burning something for energy. You're still producing a ton of carbon emissions. And the issue with carbon emissions is that they are, you know, trapped in the atmosphere, the greenhouse gas effect. And it's causing the planet to heat up, which is climate change, at the root of climate change. And climate change is now a major problem. It's going to disrupt everything we know about how we live life on this planet. Where and when food grows, for example, since we've been talking about food, is one of the biggest potential things that climate's going to impact. It's going to impact migration patterns as well on animals, but also in human beings. People are going to not be able to live in parts of the world that were once habitable, right? So these are, you know, I know this climate's a big issue, but it's very deeply tied to how we live life, how we power society, what energy we use. So what we've been asking for as an environmental community is, again, more renewable energy. You don't have to burn anything to use the sun. The sun is already burning, and those emissions are not trapped on our planet. You know, we could use wind. Wind is a very powerful source of energy. We want to obviously pair that with battery storage so that when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't bright, that energy that was generated is captured and usable. And the most important thing is managing energy usage through energy efficiency. We want to have less waste because right now we're wasting a lot of energy. You turn on your air conditioner, a lot of it's just leaking out of the doors and cracks. And so you're burning all the stuff to power a home for most of it to just be wasted. That's like cooking dinner and somebody eating a plate and throwing the rest away, right? We all know how that goes. So what we're asking for from, you know, people like the Public Service Commission is to, you know, tell the power company to choose these different sources of energy, which are also cheaper. They have less cost. They're actually financially cheaper to build. And also, they don't have all those costs on the back end that I explained in the form of pollution, you know, public health, and of course, climate change. So the reason why we're going to the Public Service Commission is because they oversee our power company. Our power company has been granted a monopoly. That is so that there's not a lot of competition and a bunch of hands in the pie on the electricity grid. That having a lot of different actors makes that the ability to manage the grid much more complicated. So that is why we have a monopoly. And so this means one company is largely responsible for generating energy, for maintaining the grid, which the electrons move through, and making sure that everything gets transmitted to where it's supposed to go safely. That's largely been trusted to Georgia Power. And so because they have a monopoly, the Public Service Commission was created to make sure that they did not take advantage of customers. If my bill goes up too high, I can't just choose a different power provider, right? So that inherently is a risk. The power company can charge as much as they want to, and you don't really have a choice. You've got to pay for it. So the only entity that is capable of protecting people from that greed is the Public Service Commission. They're there to make sure that the power company provides safe and reliable energy, and also that it is affordable. It is reasonably priced. That is a clear part of their mission. But it seems like our commissioners have just largely forgotten the reasonably priced part. They feel like it's their job to make sure that Georgia Power is a profitable company because they are also an investor-owned utility. So that means investors put in money, their shares of the company. This is a company on the stock market. And companies in the stock market want to show that they're making a profit. That's how they get more investors, right? And so, it seems like our public service commissioners are more concerned about making sure that Georgia Power is making a profit, Southern Company, which is their parent company, is making a profit. And the issue that I have with that is, where do those profits come from? Mm-hmm. They come from people paying power bills. So every year, the power company wants more money for one reason or the other. Oh, we got to build more things. We got to build this $30 billion nuclear plant that you need. Trust us. Oh, well, gas prices went up. You got to pay for that, too. The latest thing is storm costs. The storms are getting more extreme. I wonder why. That's also a consequence of a changing climate. We have more extreme, severe storms, and that's going to continue because you have more heat. You have melting ice caps, which means more water. More heat plus more water equals stronger storms. And so they're coming in and they're, knocking out electricity, trees are falling, power infrastructure is failing. So the power company has to go out and repair that, make sure that the power comes back on. And so they're saying, oh, this costs more money. You got to pay for that too. And so everywhere you look, there is a reason for them to raise the bills. And the issue at hand is, they're now saying, oh, well, we need all of this money in order to provide you with this electricity. But at the same time, the company is posting record-breaking profits. Right. The profits just keep going up and up and up. So it's not that you're taking money out of people's pockets to ensure that we have the safe and reliable electricity. You're taking money out of people's pockets so you can pay your executives more, so that they can go home with multi-million dollar compensation packages. You can post record-breaking profits and then get even more money from investors. So, it'd be one thing, like I said, if every dollar was going into truly investing in the grid and investing in reliable electricity, but it's not. It's very clearly going into the pockets of the power company and the people that invest in them. And so it's wealth transfer. At its worst, it is Georgia Power used to regularly say, 40% of our customers make less than $40,000 a year. Like, do you even hear that? That means like most of their customers are poor.
Yeah.
You know this to be true. $40,000 a year is not a lot of money, especially not for anybody who's got a family, let alone a big family. So you know a lot of the people in your customer base are struggling to make ends meet, and here you are raising bills left, right, and sideways on them and then pocketing those profits, and saying, oh, look at us. We're doing so well. Look at how much money we've made. It's wealth transfer. You're taking the money from poor people. And our Public Service Commission is supposed to be there to say, you know what? No, you can't have this rate increase. Actually, no, you need to take a hit on your profit so that this doesn't harm customers. But they don't do that. They just let the power company have what it wants. And so that's why we got to be there.
And also a fun fact, none of the Public Service Commissioners that are currently sitting have Georgia Power for a provider, do they?
Yeah, so most of, so there's a lot going on, right? So, no, it's okay. It's important. So I did say that Georgia Power has monopoly. They largely generate most of the energy in the state. There are some other energy generators, but they are, you know, not the size of Georgia Power. And then also, you know, there's the group that generates energy, and then there's also who you pay for your power bill. So across the state, you have these electric membership co-ops, and you also have municipal utilities. So not everybody is paying Georgia Power directly. Some people are going through an EMC or a municipal utility. So I'm not going to go into the weeds about the differences between them, but what's important is that when the Public Service Commission approves a rate increase, they're specifically approving rate increases or bill increases, any fees and charges that they add to bills, they are doing that for Georgia Power customers specifically. And so the people who are paying Georgia Power directly are the ones who feel the impacts of the Public Service Commission's approvals for various bill increases most directly. EMC customers, municipal customers, they are paying somebody different, and so they are not necessarily experiencing these rate increases as directly. Their power utilities, whether it is a municipal utility or an EMC, they're buying power wholesale from Georgia Power and then redistributing it to you, and that's what that's about. So you're not getting that direct hit if you're an electric membership co-op customer or you're paying the city of East Point, for example. So why this matters is that, you know, all the commissioners all live in rural parts of the state, or they're just not in the Metro Atlanta area or directly in an area that's serviced by Georgia Power. So this means they're paying either EMCs. I think they're all pretty much EMC customers. And so, yeah, they're not even feeling the rate increases because they're not paying Georgia Power bills. So they have really no accountability to the people that they're supposed to be protecting because they're not even one of those people, you know? And it's just particularly frustrating because at least one of the commissioners is going to push back and he'll say, no, I live in the district. And that's Fitz Johnson. And Fitz Johnson represents Public Service Commission District 3, which is the Metro Atlanta area. So you've got Fulton and DeKalb County. It's mostly Public Service Commission District 3. And those customers are Georgia Power customers, right? They pay Georgia Power directly, mostly. And so Fitz Johnson claims that he lives in an apartment in District 3. Now, the man has a million-dollar house out in Cobb County, okay?
He's just holding on to that.
That's his side home. We know this man does not really live in the district. That was challenged in court. It got thrown out, and it was just ridiculous because, Daniel Blackman's residency also got challenged. They said he didn't really live in the district. Apparently it's okay for Fitz, but Daniel moving into the district wasn't okay. Okay, yeah, so... there's some nuance there, but it's very frustrating because we know, you know, the man isn't really here. He's not really, experiencing the impact of the bill increases like most of the people who really are in District 3 who pay Georgia Power and have been paying Georgia Power for a very long time and don't have a second home in another county that they can go to. So I just want to say that because he insists that he lives in the district.
And again, probably not making the same salary that most of the people living in those areas are either. So,
right.
It's just a difference there. So with the Public Service Commission elections being so important, obviously, for our bills, who are the new candidates? We haven't had these elections in a long time for other reasons that we have dived into in other podcasts, but can we talk a little bit about the two candidates that are on the ballot and that are, could change some of these things that we're talking about?
Sure. Peter Hubbard is the city, excuse me, I keep saying city, is the Public Service Commission district candidate for District 3. And so Peter Hubbard actually has a really long history in intervening at the Public Service Commission. He's been an energy advocate for a long time. So he really understands the technical issues at the commission, which are important to understand. So, you know, he can get in the weeds of rate making and the charges and fees on bills and the various programs that the power company does or does not have to support renewable energy, including rooftop solar programs. He's been working through a nonprofit. The name escapes me, but he has been deeply engaged in the Public Service Commission for many, many years. And so he's a smart guy. He understands the business side of energy, but also the people side of energy. And he's been campaigning very hard to win our votes. And I think that when he gets on the commission, we can trust that he is going to be an advocate for us, for the people who really are impacted by the power bill increases, who want to see some relief, but who also want to see some progress on renewable energy. Alicia Johnson is running for Public Service Commission District 2. She lives in Savannah, and she's been an advocate for the people for a really, really long time. She's been the head of a nonprofit. She currently works for a consulting firm, but her specialty is public health, and specifically, you know, what is impacting Black, brown, low-income people and the types of solutions that we need to protect them. And so she is an advocate for the people. And although she doesn't come from, you know, decades of an energy background, she is active, engaged, picking up this issue very, very quickly, and deeply, deeply committed to protecting the people of Georgia. And right now, we don't really have that type of advocate on the commission. And so it's really important, in my opinion, that we get both of them. You have this 1-2 punch of somebody that's really technical in the weeds and somebody who really, really gets like what it takes to protect people. And united, they can stand a really tough fight up against the power company and the regulators that they have captured.
No, I absolutely agree. And we had both Peter and Alicia on the podcast in the past couple of weeks. So y'all go check that out if you haven't watched it. But yeah, they've both shown expertise in different areas. And I love that. You do need people that are out here fighting for the people. You also need people who are energy experts and know how to fight for the people. All right. So as we come to a close, a couple of more questions for you. Mm-hmm. This is obviously very important. And I want to talk a little bit about what's in the future for GCV. We started out with what GCV has done this year. What does next year look like? Paint a picture for 2026.
Whew, next year, my goodness, I'm gonna have to get some good sleep over the holidays to be ready for what is coming. It's gonna be an interesting year because we have a midterm election. So what this means is we have one of our senators back on the ballot. That is John Ossoff. And he is the only Democratic senator running for re-election in a state that Trump won. Yeah. So he is very much a target from the Republican Party, from anti-climate interests, you know, entrenched fossil fuel money. I mean, they're going to be coming for him, right? And so it's going to be really important that we stay engaged and we lean in to supporting John, who has been a champion for us since he's been a senator. He has been one of the hardest fighters for clean energy, especially the clean energy economy, right? So actually trying to make sure that as we move forward on climate, that there is a real economic benefit for the people of Georgia. And, you know, he played a really important role in getting a lot of the companies that we've seen opening up in Georgia for EV manufacturing, the, you know, Bluebird electric vehicle buses, the battery plants that have opened up, Q-cells. A lot of this had to do with John Ossoff supporting various pieces of legislation that led to those direct economic benefits for Georgia. And in fact, Georgia was really one of the top recipients from the Inflation Reduction Act, which Ossoff did support. We got over $2 billion in investment, which has been immediately and directly impacted by the Trump administration coming in and, you know, cutting back all of those investments. And so we've definitely felt that in Georgia, and our state leadership has had to scramble to keep these plans in place. And so, you know, Ossoff has been a champion. He's going to be on the ballot, and we should definitely protect him because he's been fighting for people on climate in particular, but on a whole other set of issues, especially healthcare and other things. And so he's going to be at the top of the ballot. We have all of our congressional seats on the ballot, so you're going to be able to vote for your U.S. congressperson. And so whether you're living in Nikema Williams district or you're living in Marjorie Taylor Greene land, you know, you'll have an opportunity to vote in those congressional races. And then we also have our statewide races. We've got governor on the ballot. We've got lieutenant governor. There's all the insurance commissioner, the labor commissioner. And of course, our public service commissioners are back on the ballot. We will have Public Service Commission District 3 back on the ballot. So even if Peter Hubbard wins this year, please remember that you're going to have to go out to vote again to make sure he gets to keep his seat. You know, just like with Warnock, we had to keep coming out and voting for Warnock. You got to keep coming out and voting for Peter. So he'll be on the ballot, but we'll also have another Public Service Commission race, and that is Public Service Commission District 5 as well. So if we win this year and then we win again in 2026, we can have a majority on the Public Service Commission. And that is important because Peter and Alicia, if they win, they'll still just be 2 out of 5 commissioners. You need at least 3 to have a majority. And so if we get it this year, we got to come back and finish the job in 2026 so they can have a majority. And then we can start to see real meaningful progress on the commission. So people should be looking forward to that. And then depending also where you are in the state, you're going to have your state legislators. So state representatives, state senators, and you're also probably going to have some local races as well. I know the city of Atlanta had its election this year, but some cities and counties are going to be having their elections next year as well. And so if that sounds like a lot,
it does.
It is. You know, I keep telling people the average American has like 40 plus people representing them. And it's really hard to keep up with all those people. So I'll remind people once again about our branch tool, gcv.branch.vote. Super important. As informed as I am, I still have to use that tool every single time before I go to the polls so I can see all the races on my ballot and make as informed decision as I possibly can in these races. So, you know, we'll be here. We'll be helping people out navigate this really noisy landscape. But our most important thing is making sure we don't lose sight of those Public Service Commission races just because they're going to be a little bit further down the ballot.
No, and thank you for lifting up that branch tool. I use it myself, and it's a game changer. I don't know how many times I've gotten to the ballot box, and I was like, who is this random name that I've never heard of?
You know, a soil and water conservation district supervisor. That's a real position.
And this is why branch exists, so you can read up on that ahead of time before you get to the polls. It makes it a lot quicker. Okay, so 2026 sounds like it's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
Let's pedal back to next week. Let's pedal back to the present. Remind our viewers one last time, there's an election coming up.
Yes.
As of right now, as people are hearing this, it is Thursday, October 30th. What do people need to do?
Yeah, so if we haven't made it clear, please go out and vote in this year's Public Service Commission election. We have Public Service Commission District 2, Alicia Johnson, and Public Service Commission District 3, Peter Hubbard. They will be at the top of your ballot. I know because I've already taken care of my vote. I love early voting. I love to get it knocked out. I encourage you to take advantage of the last week of early voting. And then if you don't get your early vote in, you do have to vote on Election Day, which is Tuesday, November 4th. And you do have to show up at your specific voter precinct, which you can look up on our branch tool, but you can also go to mvp.sos.ga.gov to double check your precinct location. But again, that's why I like early voting, because I like having lots of different options on where I can vote and when. So yeah, please vote for the public service commissioners. We also have lots of city races happening. If you live in the city of Atlanta, hottest race in town is the Atlanta City Council president race. We've got Rohit Malhotra, who is running for Atlanta City Council president. He is our endorsed candidate. I think that he is amazing. He is just the type of public policy nerd that I am, you know. So, you know, he says he's a nerd. I'm a nerd. We're going to out-nerd each other here. I think it's important to have people who have studied these issues very closely. who understand the ins and outs of public policy, but who are also very much committed to the people, who are going to fight for the people, even when it's not always the most politically expedient thing to do. We need people who understand that the role is about more than just showing up to ribbon cuttings, that it's about getting in the weeds of policy and understanding the impact of those policies on people. Rohit is a fighter for the people. He's been supporting people for his entire career. He has also run a nonprofit dedicated to helping specifically the people of Atlanta, small business owners, really succeed in this city. And so I really encourage you all to go out and vote for Rohit Malhotra for Atlanta City Council president. We've also endorsed lots of different city council districts as well, and I really encourage you to go out and vote in those races. If you don't live in Atlanta, that's okay. We've got big elections happening in many other places, including Marietta. Shout out to Sam Foster. Really, really cool. Also endorsed candidate. And so I really encourage you all to take a look at our website, see who that we've endorsed, and again, check out that branch tool so you can see who's going to be on your ballot. But that is the mission, is to go out and elect true champions of the people, people who are going to do the right thing, not just for the planet, but also for people. And so we do our best to try to make that easy to understand. And so I hope you go out and vote.
Absolutely. I need to go out and do that myself. And so do you. As a reminder, early voting ends October 31st. Election Day is November 4th. That is a Tuesday. To find out more information about Georgia Conservation Voters and the work that they do, you can visit gcvoters.org. Thank you so much, Briante, for joining us.
So much fun. Yeah. All right.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.